All right, so welcome back to another episode of Off the Gas and On the Mic with Chase Holland. Here today with me, a special guest, sponsor, and I would say CrossFit coach, but kind of life coach too, Miss Janice Ferguson. How are you today?
I'm good, Chase, and let me just be the first to say, or maybe I'm not the first to say this, you have a really nice radio voice.
Thank you. That's definitely a first, but
I was surprised. I can hear it loud and clear. Very good.
Good deal.
Very good. People pay big money to have voiceover type stuff from people like your voice.
Well, thank you. Well, what all did you get into today? Let's start there.
Oh, it's been a long day. Nothing really exciting today. I did train your mom this morning, and she loved me for that. It was not bad. Did you do the workout?
I didn't go today. Okay. I skipped out today.
It wasn't bad. She didn't like some of the dumbbell stuff, but she did it. Your mom is like a real beast. I don't know if your people know that or not about her, but she is like an Energizer bunny, and she's so good at what she does. So
yeah, and it's not that I doubted my mom, but like obviously you were there on Monday, but when we worked out, I was like, my goodness, she's seasoned at this. She's gotten really good.
That's the word, seasoned. Your mom is very seasoned at that. Yeah, because I think she probably did all five rounds.
Yeah.
Did we do six?
It was supposed to be six, yeah. but I checked out on three. I was racking all my stuff up while y'all were continuing on.
Yeah, so your mom was kind of a highlight of my day. She always is. I meet her at least twice a week. And then I did take my dad to the VA today for some doctor's appointments. So we spent about 3 hours there. So that's why it wasn't very exciting. I didn't get to do too much. I had some personal training, you know, just normal real estate stuff, just normal day. So nothing exciting. I didn't even work out today either.
Really?
This podcast.
Right.
This is a workout right now for me. So I bless my heart rate. It's only 75, so I'm good.
Well, good. We're glad to have you. So let's go through, where are you from? I mean, I know where you're from, but for people listening.
So I am from, born and raised right here, 10 minutes down from where you live. Lived here my whole life. My dad lived here his whole life. He was born here. His dad bought the farm that we live on in 1930 something, probably. I don't know. It's been a while. So every line of my family has been here since the 1800s. So I'm born and raised Mississippi Gulf Coast through and through.
Right here, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a Williams is my, you know, I'm married. I'm a Williams. But my second great-grandfather came here after the Revolution.
Really?
In the early 1800s. So we've been here a long time.
Yeah, this is certainly home. That's interesting. Yeah. I don't even know I guess it'd be heritage well.
I do. Just ask your mom. I know about one of her lines. I know about her lines. Your crowd may enjoy this. It's your mom's side. She has some Walker in her. That's who Ruby is named after.
Okay.
So that's her grandma on that side, and she's actually descended from. I don't know if any of your people care about Scotland, but it's pretty cool. It's a cool story. There was a really famous battle in Scotland called. Oh my gosh, Culloden, the Battle of Culloden. And that's where the Jacobites were actually being put out by the House of Tudor, I guess it was. And then the English monarchy was established, and they went through Scotland and were killing all of your people.
Really?
So your family had to flee to France, the Walker side did. And they were descended from the Bonnie Prince Charlie. So they were royalty. They were Scottish royalty. And they finally made their way to America. And I think it was in Maryland. Don't quote me on that. But your people can look this up. It's called Topping Castle, T-O-A-P-I-N-G. And that was where they built their first home in America. And it was somewhere in the Northeast Maryland area. And somehow, some way, they made their way down to Collins, Mississippi. I think it's Collins is where it was.
Yeah.
And then your Ruby, your grandmother Ruby, I think she's your great-grandmother probably.
Yeah.
She made her way to Gulfport. So you are descended from Scottish royalty.
That's
fun
interesting.
Fun fact about your family. And the only reason I know that is because I have Walker in my family. I do family genealogy in all my spare time. So when your mom told me she was kin to the Walkers, I was like, oh, my gosh, so am I. Yeah. So I had to try to look it up to see if we were kin.
Yeah.
Because I'm kin to a lot of people down here from being here for so long. But I don't think that that's the same Walker line that mine is. But I did go on an interesting history journey about your family, your Walker side of your family. It was really cool.
Where do you find, like you just Google search that? Like, do you have to dig through books for that nowadays? Like, how do you find that?
That's a variety of sources. Books, possible, but like the Internet Archive, I'm a big nerd. So there's like this thing called the Internet Archive, and they have a bunch of history books preserved online, but it's a lot of it is just like genealogy records inside of like Ancestry. They have this site called Find a Grave. They have all these resources for you, and you just kind of get on a trail and you just start searching all the different newspapers.com is like an old historical repository of all the newspapers. Not all of them, but like if people have put them online. So you're just looking up through there and finding different things. It's like a big, it's an adventure. So.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know all of that. So not only did I get a history lesson, but they did too as well. So
they need to start calling you King Chase.
There you go.
The Bonnie Prince Chase. I mean, I don't know. But yeah, so you are descended from that line, interestingly.
That's very interesting for sure.
You're listening to Off the Gas and On the Mic with Chase Holland.
Well, talk about, I wouldn't call it your modern day family, but your family today.
Yeah.
How many, you've got daughters, correct?
Yeah, I do. I'm married to my husband, Richard, and we've been married for 27 years, I think, or maybe 28, I don't know. We were married in 1998, and we have two daughters, Casey, and she's TikTok famous, by the way. I don't know if your crowd would cross over to TikTok and go to food TikTok, but you can go to Casey Ferguson on food TikTok, and you can see her making wings and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And then Gracie is her younger sister, and she is mildly TikTok famous, and she helps your mom at the store. So Gracie works for your mom. But yeah, I met my husband in 1997. I met him at a bull riding pen in Wiggins.
Really?
Wiggins, Mississippi, and he was riding bulls, and I was riding bulls, and he's not from here. My husband is from Texas, so when I saw him up there, I was like, hey, look at that guy. He doesn't look like he's from around here, so, because, you know, I knew everybody,
right,
and I kept trying to walk in front of him, like trying to get his attention, and he would not give me the time of day. And I was very upset about that. So about a month later, that's where I met him at a bar. You won't know this bar because it was back in the 90s. So if you've got any local people that are like fans and watch from my age group, they will remember Michael's Nightclub in Gulfport on Highway 49. It was a country bar back then. So he was there about a month later.
Really?
And that's where I finally, all his friends came up to me. They were like, there's that girl that was riding those bulls. And I was like, yeah, what about it? None of y'all interest me. Your friend, because he wouldn't come up to me still. He was still being stubborn. I'm like, what is wrong with this guy? He won't give me the time of day. So I used to smoke back then. And so I had cigarettes. And the guys were like, oh,
thank you for clarifying. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, cigarettes. I forget these days you can't say smoke. People think something different. But it was smoking Marlboro Lights when I smoked. So anyways, and that's when they used to sell them at the bar and the cigarette machines and stuff. But anyways, they were like, hey, girl, give us a cigarette. And I was like, I'll give you a cigarette if you tell your friend to come over here and dance with me. Because he was standing over there in the corner. And so they went over there and told him. He'll have to tell you this story one day because he tells it better than I do. But they were like, that's the girl riding the bull. She won't give us a cigarette and she'd go dance with her. Come on, Ferg. They called him Ferg. Go dance with her. And he's like, I will in a minute. Well, he didn't come over there. So I'm not the kind to like take anybody not giving me what I want. So I went over there by him by the corner. I was like, so you going to dance with me or what? And he looked at me. He's like, who is this girl? And he's like, when I finish this beer, I will. And I was like, okay. And he said, and I'll be damned, you stood there. He thought I would go away. So I stood there, and he came and danced with me. And then he came home with me that night.
The rest is history, so to speak.
The rest is history. The rest is history. That was the night before Thanksgiving in 1997. And he was in the military. So he wasn't here with his family.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's from Texas, like central Texas, a real small town called Aquila, Texas, population 136 used to be. I don't know what it is anymore. But it's in the central Texas area, kind of north of Waco, west of West, comma Texas, not West Texas, but West, comma Texas,
gotcha.
Where the Clutchies are. And so he came over for Thanksgiving, and I have a big family because we all live here.
Right,
and
right.
Which your family knows my family, and like your grandpa Ronnie comes to some of our family functions and stuff. So we just have a big family, and sometimes it's not always family there. It's like just friends that we consider family.
Right.
And so he walks in. I forgot his name. What his name was, but I remembered that I was just smitten by him. And so he came in and he stood there. He stayed there all day with us, hanging out, and just ever since then we've been together.
So you didn't know his name?
I forgot his name.
You forgot his name.
I forgot his name. Because that's back before like cell phones and stuff and social media.
Yeah, you couldn't just look him up and find him.
And what's worse is I actually didn't know his birthday whenever we had a baby, and I had to fill out the birth certificate. Because he wasn't here. Because let me tell you this part of the story. I got in the family way about a month and a half after we met. So we got married about a month after that. And
gotcha.
Then he deployed. So he left for 7 months. And I had my first child in a hurricane. Hurricane George.
Really?
And he wasn't able to be here. So, because you're at a hospital. Airplanes are coming in. So we were at the hospital. So they're like, ma'am, we need to know your husband's birthday for this birth certificate. I was so embarrassed. It was more embarrassing than not knowing his name in front of my family. That I didn't know my husband that I had just made a baby with. I did not know his birthday. So, but, we've been married for, like I said, 27, 28 years now. And sometimes he doesn't remember my birthday, but I still forgive him.
I guess you kind of have to at that point.
Yeah.
Well, we do. Real quick, everything's been great so far. Just... Please grab your mic some more, because the only reason is because it's starting to rain. So just just
right
so that we can
too.
Hear you, because the story's been great so far, and I don't want to at the end
this.
Of it miss it. Yeah,
you don't
for sure.
Miss this. Well, yeah, and we've had a lot of adventures since then. We are world champion wild hog catchers.
Really?
Yes. I should have brought my belt buckle and let y'all see that. We're the co-ed champions.
Okay.
So we did that one time in Texas. We went to like a wild, we hunt hogs with dogs.
Right.
So we went to a wild hog festival. And they had like some bay dogs and stuff there. And then they had people where you could catch the pigs yourself in a pen.
Really?
So his job was to catch it. And my job, you had to also put it in a bag. So it was the fastest time of who could get their pig in a bag. So it was not a big pig. He might have been 80 pounds. He wasn't big.
Right.
Well, my husband grabs the pig by the back legs, okay? And I don't know if you've ever been around a wild hog.
I haven't, no.
But pop, 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 they're popping their mouth at you. They're trying to bite you. They're not very happy.
Now, is this a couple's thing? Really quick, is this a couple's thing, or is this predominantly like two men doing this?
Well, they had a co-ed division.
Okay,
they do have a men's, they had some men's division, but look, I'd compete in the men's division, I wouldn't care, but
right.
We did enter the co-ed, and there were some people there that were the reigning champions, and because we'd never been there before, and we were like, well, they don't know us, so, because they were talking smack down at the bottom, they're like, yeah, we're reigning champions, we're like, we'll wait and see, so we unseated the reigning champions.
Okay.
But, so you had to get the pig in the bag. Well, he had that hog by its back legs, and I'm like, well, how are you going to, you're behind him holding his back legs, I'm gonna have to get at the front of this pig and try to get his head in this bag, and he keeps trying to bite me. But we did it. I can't remember what our time was, but we won. Our time was the fastest, and they sure enough, they had the fanciest. It's a gold and silver belt buckle. It's got a big nasty wild boar on the front of it, and it's beautiful. And then there's hog tracks all the way around the edge of it. It's one of my prized possessions.
I'd imagine so.
And it's one of the greatest things I've ever done, even outside of, I've been on American Ninja Warrior.
Have you been on TV?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I've been on the Broken Skull Challenge with Stone Cold Steve Austin. I don't know
I didn't
if you've
know
seen that.
That
show.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, so my wild hog catching is probably my favorite thing that I've ever done. So.
Well, real quick, and then we'll come back to the wild hog catching. You talk about y'all were riding bulls.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who was the better bull rider at that point?
Oh, don't. Well, he had a lot more experience with it. So okay. I was just doing it because I thought it looked. Look, I like extreme stuff.
Right.
So I always grew up riding horses, and I ran barrels and did all the rodeo stuff as a, you know, teenager. And I just thought it would be cool to do. Now, I can ride a mechanical bull like nobody's business as well. But he was like, you actually look pretty good doing that. I was like, that I looked like I knew what I was doing. Right. I'd never rode a bull. That was the first time I'd ever tried it. So he is probably better.
Okay.
But that's just because I didn't have as much time.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I was just curious if what the answer would be to that one for sure. So as far as the wild hog stuff goes, you know, I was at CrossFit Monday and you were telling us stories, which I guess I'll have to get him in here tell us a story.
Your people would love him because he tells some good stories and better than me.
Well, you'll have to tell him that we need him in here for sure. So at this point you've had, this is Casey.
We had Casey.
And then you have Gracie.
Mm-hmm.
And then where does the CrossFit and stuff come into it? What have you done? Well, like, what are you doing before CrossFit?
Yeah, I started getting into CrossFit in 2005. So, okay. Well, that's when I heard about it the first time. And so, again, you know, I like extreme.
Right.
So we are MMA fans. And we used to watch like UFC 1, 2, 3, 4, right. Back whenever Tank Abbott would fight, you know, Royce Gracie. And it's like you got a big dude and little dude meeting at the end of the thing. And so they don't do UFC like that anymore. But we used to get a magazine called Real Fighter Magazine. And they had a story about BJ Penn doing CrossFit, something called CrossFit.
Right.
New. This is, you know, before social media, before all that. So that's where I looked it up. And I was like, I saw these people doing, like, these weird, like, this girl, she just kept doing pull-ups. Like, she just kept on. And I was like, geez, how is she doing that? And, you know, most people will look at people doing extreme stuff and say, oh, I could never do that. But right. I don't ever look at anything extreme. Like, I could drive your race car.
I believe it. Yeah, yeah.
I don't look at, I mean, it might take me a little practice and I won't be good at it. I would try it.
Right.
I'm not afraid to try it.
Yep.
So, and that's how I saw CrossFit is like, how could I do that? Not, oh, I could never do that.
Right.
You know, I really just wanted to experience something that was so outside the norm. And so I just kind of taught it to myself. This was back in, we were living in Texas.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I didn't know you moved away from here.
Yeah. Okay. I lived in Texas for about 5 or 6 years and I really love it there. I feel at home in Texas. I mean, I feel at home here.
Right.
But I really, really liked where we lived in Texas. Every part of Texas is different.
Yeah.
You know, Central Texas kind of has its own flavor. East Texas is different. South Texas is different. The Panhandle's different.
Right.
You know, each one of those areas is like its own little country. West Texas, don't want to forget them. They might get upset. but, yeah, so it's different there. But anyways, there was only 3 CrossFit gyms in the whole state at that time.
And that's in Texas.
That's in Texas. That's 3. A huge, yeah, wow. 3. That's right now we have 14,000 affiliates worldwide.
Wow.
So I kind of started teaching it to myself. I had a concrete slab. I used a broomstick with cinder blocks for deadlifting.
Social media wasn't a thing back then.
You got it. Oh, man, all the best stuff I've ever done is not on social media. I can tell you that right now. But yeah, I used a broomstick with the cinder blocks. I had, a jump rope. I had some chintzy dumbbells. Just did what I could do trying to teach it to myself because it's not easy.
No, it's not.
And there's a lot of stuff to it. You know, CrossFit has a lot of different disciplines. Well, Hurricane Katrina happened.
Yep.
And when that happened, I kind of got on a one-track mind to come back home. Because my parents, I couldn't talk to them for 5 days. I was
like,
are they dead or alive? Did a tornado come in and rip them? And the news was showing people killing people over toilet paper. I was like, and you know, we live out this way.
Right.
So I was like, oh my gosh, are people coming up from town and getting on our farm and killing our cows and stuff. I mean, I don't know. You know, you just, the news tells you such a different story than what the truth is. So I told my husband at that point, because we had kids, and I was like, you know, my parents would really like to be with my kids. And if you don't mind,
right,
I'd love to go back to Mississippi. And he was a good sport because he's a Texan. I don't know if you know many of them.
I don't know many of them. I only raced with a handful of them. We've never really raced in Texas. So what I do, I don't know anybody.
Well, they're really proud of their state.
I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing. No, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And he's native Texan. So it's not like you can't move there.
Right.
Like, I was never one. I lived there for 6 years. But I got there as fast as I could. That's right. What they say. Let me tell you how my husband, how much he loves Texas. When we had our first kid, you know, he's in the military. I'm from here. My parents are from here. Everything I know is from here. He wanted to figure out a way that I could go stay with his family to have our baby just temporarily. So at the bare minimum, she could have a Texas birth certificate. So that's how prideful they are of their state. So,
well, that tells me a lot right there.
Yeah. So if you've got Texans listening, they'll probably back up.
Oh, for sure.
And their state picture is all over everything. And when you go to the hotel, the waffle maker is the shape of Texas.
Nuh-uh.
The pools in the hotels can be the shape of Texas. Their beer has Texas on the beer. Texas brewed, Texas proud, Texas, Texas, Texas. So they're very proud of their state. So for him to come back here, you know, and he's fine here. I mean, he has settled in. He's got his life here now, and he's fine, and everything's good. But, so that's how he came back, and I kind of put CrossFit down for a little bit. And I've done a lot of jobs. I've done everything from veterinary technician, building cabinets, telemarketer, worked as a cashier at Kmart.
Well, what was your favorite thing to do before CrossFit? Like, what was your favorite job before that?
I've liked all of them.
Really?
Yeah, I used to be a teacher.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I used to be a teacher. I taught 8th grade science for about 4 years. I also used to plan events at the Beau Rivage, a local hotel that we have here. I was in the catering and conventions department there. So I planned events. I was in public relations. I used to be a journalist. I was a freelance journalist. Yeah. I did that. I did, public relations for a nonprofit. So I've done quite a bit.
Yeah.
I was a president of a CrossFit competition company for a minute. That was fun. I enjoyed doing that. And the goal kind of always was to open my own CrossFit gym. And so I cashed out my teacher retirement. I got back into CrossFit. When I started being a teacher in 2008, you know, I left all those other jobs, and I was like, I got to do something to be with my kids. And in 2008 is when I became a teacher.
So you moved here, boom, back here, 2005, 2006.
Yeah, 2006, okay. Thanksgiving time, 2006.
So you're back here, and then you decide that you need to go work for, you need to go work at school.
Yeah, to be with my kids.
Okay. And then, so this is where the CrossFit starts coming in, where you start revisiting that side of it.
Yeah, it comes back. And so let me tell you what inspired me to do that. Well, see, whenever I was in high school, I broke the state record in the mile. I was a very good runner in high school. And then I threw it all away partying. I was wild. I don't want to embarrass my mom and daddy, but I left home and I did, you know, just living the party life. And that's why I think my husband probably saved me, because right now I'd probably be at a bar in Wool Market drinking beer and smoking cigarettes rather than talking to you right now if I didn't have the life-changing event that happened when I met my husband and we got pregnant, and that kind of put me on a straight path. So what it did is I always was kind of disappointed in myself from not following up with what I felt like my potential was from my athletic career in high school.
Right.
So when I saw the CrossFit Games in 2010, I was like, I didn't know CrossFit had a competition part of it. I thought it was just fitness.
Right, right.
You know, if I could crush somebody's soul, that is what, I would love to do that. So that's when I started. I told my husband, I'm going to do this CrossFit thing, and I'm going to go to the CrossFit Games.
Really?
And here I was, like, never have even touched a barbell in my life.
Yeah, at this point, we're cinder blocks and broomsticks, but we're going to the Games.
I'm going to the CrossFit Games. And he's always supported every – I always tell people he's been married to about 12 different versions of me. And he's been the same steady old Richard this whole time, Mr. Hog Hunter extraordinaire. Good provider of the family, very steady. And here I am, let's go do this. So he actually made me take out a life insurance policy on myself because he was like, you're going to die.
Yeah.
One of these days doing the stuff you do. Yeah. And I'm not going to be stuck here paying all these bills that you have put me in into hock on.
Well, that's interesting.
So anyway, we get into the CrossFit stuff, and that's whenever I really decided, you know, I think my kids in school told me this one day, because we would be doing CrossFit stuff in class. Right. I'd make them do, like, science stuff with fitness and whatever, and they're like, Miss Fergie, why do you spend so much time looking at CrossFit stuff? You should just go open a CrossFit gym. And I was like, I never thought about that. Maybe I should.
Yeah.
So that was probably like 2010, 2011. 2012, I did qualify for the CrossFit Regionals, which is a stepping stone to get to the CrossFit Games. So I became pretty good at the time.
Right, you know, right.
These days, I'm not. These people are phenomenal these days. It's just crazy how good they are at CrossFit. But back in 2012, I was decent, and I did make it to Regionals. And then in 2012, after I did that, I actually cashed out my teacher retirement because I'm not afraid to do anything.
Right.
So I took all that money. It was only $9,000, and I opened a CrossFit gym.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Is it still in the original location?
No.
Okay.
No, I actually started in a boot camp in my backyard. It was called Fergie's Boot Camp.
Really? Yeah. Fergie's Boot Camp.
Fergie's Boot Camp. And then my husband got tired of everybody using our bathroom. So he was like, y'all got to get out of here. When I get home from work, I don't want to be dealing with all this stuff, because he doesn't work out. I mean, but he could go run circles around all of us. But,
right.
I mean, because he works for a living. He's like, I don't need to work out. I work for a living.
Yeah.
So I moved it to a park, a Wool Market walking track.
Okay.
And then from there, that's when I went to a storage unit. So we had like 700 square feet of space, no running water, and we used a porta potty. For a bathroom. That was in 2013.
And that was at the walking track?
We left the walking track. Yeah, it's like
okay.
It just kept growing. It's like, you know, we'd have to rain out because of rain. And I was like, well, I got to get some cover.
Right, right.
So that's when we moved to that storage unit. You know where Chester Lamey's is?
I don't.
No, he's got that yellow Corvette across the street from Darrell High School. He used to have a body shop there. You know the yellow Corvette on the sign? The big yellow Corvette?
I do.
Yeah. I was right there. I was in one of those storage units. And so we had no running water and a porta potty, and that porta potty got rank sometimes. They'd forget to change it. But that's why that picture of the porta potty is over our bathroom in the gym right now. So if you ever use the bathroom in the gym, I want you to look up over the toilet, and there's a picture of the porta potty. So we moved to the new building in 2016.
Okay.
So that now we kind of that's kind of where I don't see myself moving from there. I mean, it's got plenty of space. I think some people thought it wouldn't work in Wool Market.
Right.
It's kind of a weird place to put a gym. But whenever your whole life has been in Wool Market.
Yeah,
I wasn't afraid of it. We actually have a great group of people that's from around there. So.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing, which, I mean, I'm coming in where it's totally successful. But, I mean, I look at it and I'm like, this is the ideal place. Like, you've got the ideal place. Mm-hmm. Everything's going correctly, you know.
We bootstrapped it. And the coach and staff that we have there is really good. I mean, I've just had so much luck with having some of the best people around. And we have the best members. So the people that are in our community are just really what makes it, you know. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's been something that's allowed me, it's hard to fit in fitness and running a business at the same time and doing all the other responsibilities of life. But the reason I keep it up is because it allows me to be a world champion wild hog catcher.
That's what keeps you going, huh?
It does. Because I'm telling you, you know, when you hunt the marshes down here.
Right.
Or you go hunt in the Pascagoula Swamp, you can't be a lightweight. You know, you've got to be tough. And that's why my husband has a hard time finding people to go hunting with him. Because it ain't easy. We don't ride a four-wheeler around and drop 30 dogs out and wait. You know, you got all this time to get yourself to right. the bay. We hunt close to our dogs. We hunt very few dogs, and we're on top of them. You know, they're short-range dogs. So it's just you got to be in shape to do stuff like that. So
right. Well, that's interesting to me. I didn't know. It's not that I didn't know, but like I've just never really heard of anybody like around us that hunt wild hogs. My uncles did it, mm-hmm. have done it, but it's over in Louisiana area.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of hogs there.
So
we have. So the problem here is we don't have a lot of public land.
Gotcha.
And so you're kind of fighting with not fighting, but it's like you know you're trying to get. Places to hunt, you kind of have to go to the more remote areas, and the hogs here are real smart, and
really
they've been run a lot, so they don't really stay and bay it. Like we used to hunt in Texas, oh my gosh, there are millions of wild hogs in Texas, all those farms around there, we would just see herds of them crossing the road.
Really?
Crossing the road, we drop dogs out, you every night you'd be catching all you want. Here when you catch one, you know, especially the way we hunt, we got two or three dogs on the ground. So when you catch one, it's just real exciting because you're right on top of it the whole time. So they run, so your dogs have to be in shape.
Right.
It's not like, you know, in Texas there's just herds of them, and it's like pick one. You know, just pick one.
Yeah, pick which one you want.
Yeah, pick which one you want. And you hope that they get the big one, not the little shoat or something, because right. that's not exciting for anybody.
Right.
But here, when you get one, especially when you jump a big one.
Really?
And you know when you've jumped a big one because they don't make noise.
Oh, really?
Our dogs don't bark because they're catching.
I got you.
So we have very expensive tracking. We got good tracking collars to help us know what's going on. But, yeah, so it's real exciting to go to a catch.
So it sounds like it's more of an adrenaline rush more than anything. That's what you're ultimately after in it.
Yeah, it's like when you know that's happening, and then you got to be in shape to run there.
Right.
It's like you're going to be running in a quarter of a mile potentially to get to where they are.
Wow.
And running through the brush or running through the marsh grass or running through, you know, whatever it is. Like the hog's going to go try to go into like a thicket. He doesn't want us. He's going to try to shake the dogs that way, but the dogs ain't scared, and they're going to go right in there with him. So you might have to be cutting briars. You know, you're going to be getting briars and everything out of the way. And so my job when we're catching is I break the dogs off. My husband catches the pig, and I break the dogs off. And when I break the dogs off, then he throws the hog and ties it. So and then used to you could keep them alive.
Yeah, and that was going to be my next question. Do you immediately kill the hog after you get it back to safety, the vehicle, wherever you're trying to get to? Or is it something? I remember at some point my dad had talked that you could keep the hog and get it eating clean, and then harvest it.
That's exactly what we used to do, because like when they're eating in the swamp or when they're eating in the marsh, they're eating dead.
Like yeah,
all
terrible.
Kind of dead stuff in there. They just don't taste as good. So you could bring them home and feed them out on corn and help them taste a little bit better before you kill them. But now the state makes it where you can't transport a live hog.
Really?
So, yeah, it used to be, too, you could transport them anytime you wanted. Then they changed the rules and made it where, well, you can transport it only if you call this number and report, I've caught a wild hog, I'm going to transport them. And you get, like, permission. And now they've made it where you can't at all. So we just stab them.
Okay, I got you.
My husband just got me a really nice knife. I got him a really nice. That's the kind of Christmas gifts I get, are guns and knives. But and I like that. I like that. So
useful things.
Useful. It's very useful. I do agree. But yeah. So yeah, you would stab them, and he has a gun on his. He's got a side gun for like snakes and stuff. And of course, if something bad happens, but we don't typically shoot them.
Right.
The only thing he shoots are deer.
So, like, what's your weapon of choice whenever you're in public if something goes down? Are we stabbing somebody or are we shooting them? Like how are you defending yourself?
Both.
Okay. And then...
Both.
And then my next question is, like, so obviously you start your gym in 2012.
Yeah.
You move into your building in 2016. You're where you're at now. Where does Hard to Kill come from? When does that come in? Is that something from hog hunting? Where did it come from?
I don't know where that came from. I must have heard it somewhere, because like it just resonated with me, the idea of being hard to kill. Like, no matter, okay, is it somebody, well, you know, I don't want to embarrass my family, but I like to fight. which I haven't been in a fight in a long time. The last fight I got into was at the bar when a girl was trying to mess with my husband. And that was a long time ago. So I've maintained, people don't try to mess with my husband anymore. So don't mess with my man and don't mess with my kids and you'll be all right. But I don't want to walk down the street and have to feel like I have to fear people. I'm not afraid to walk down the street. So I want to be hard to kill. I want to be confident. I want to be strong that I can carry myself. I want to be strong with a weapon. Right. I want to be able to handle a weapon. I want to be able to defend myself in any way. So hard to kill comes from that. But it also, in the gym space too, which we do dry fire, and I do two gun competitions, so pistol and rifle. So I'm super, I want to be comfortable with them.
Right.
So, but it also goes into the idea of like chronic disease.
Okay.
Like, I don't want to die from diabetes. I don't want to die from heart disease. So I don't want those things to ravage me or my family. And then the next thing too is like, you just never know when you would be in a situation. Like, you hear stories all the time of people getting in the water and they can't get out.
Right.
They fall down on something and they can't climb out.
Yep.
You know, or what if you see somebody in distress and you physically are unable to help someone that you care about? Like, what if somebody was drowning? And I want to be able to get out there and swim and help them.
Right.
Not be like, oh, I'm so helpless on the bank because I'm not fit.
Yep.
So to me, being fit is not just for me, but it's for the people around me that I care about.
I got you.
Being hard to kill kind of just goes in all that. And I have no idea where it came from. I really don't. I just love it. It just resonates.
It fits, for sure. It fits.
It just resonates with everything that I believe in. So.
Right. Well, so, and as long as you've been in the CrossFit business, owning a gym and stuff like that, it is considered a gym. I don't want to offend
you.
It's called a gym.
Yeah, I don't call it a box. Some CrossFit people say box. I don't say box. I say gym. So you can call it
a gym. Okay.
I call it a gym.
So within owning a gym, I'm sure you've seen all kinds of just whatever. You name it, you've seen it. What would you say is your biggest pet peeve in the gym? Like, away from improper form and stuff like that. Like, what is something that, like, if you walk in your gym and you see it happening, what are you like? Ugh.
I don't know. I just, things don't bother me.
Really?
Like that. I don't care. I mean, if you're not the form stuff, I mean, of course I want people to move well, but it's for their own good. It's not for my good. I don't, maybe chalk on the floor, maybe that might be a good pet peeve.
Okay.
I mean, it's like, but you can't stop the chalk on the floor. So, I mean, yeah, no pet peeves. I'm pretty even. Don't mess with my husband and don't mess with my kids and we're good.
That's the two things. There it is.
Yeah, that's my pet peeve. Don't be trying to take my man. Well, the first of all, if you could take him, you could have him. But I promise you, they will bring him right back. So I'm the only one made to put up with him.
Right.
But yeah, no pet peeves in the gym.
Okay. I was just curious. Well, then, what's one of the craziest stories? What's something that's happened at the gym that did catch you off guard? Like, what's something that you were like, wow, I never imagined that would happen? Or you're just ready for anything?
I'm just ready. I'm like, okay, so when people do not surprise me.
Okay.
There's nothing that you could do that I'd be like, that's surprising.
Didn't see that coming.
Yeah, people are just, well, first of all, people are pretty predictable.
Right.
You know, and you just, when you're in a group of people like that, it's just like, you know, whatever happens, you just roll with it. So, I mean, now this is kind of interesting. This guy came up one day, and he was in the Air Force, and he jumped up on that pull-up bar, and he was, I don't know what he was trying to do, but he was just a drop-in.
Right.
So he's not like a member. He jumped up and he busted his head. Blood was everywhere. And thank God I had a firefighter, because your blood is not, I used to do animal surgeries. Not, I didn't do them. My vet did them.
Right.
But I would assist in surgeries. I can look at all kind of animal stuff. I can watch my husband clean and kill anything. And it doesn't bother me. But when people's blood, oof.
So. Okay. Well, then I guess there it is. It's.
It only happened one time. But that guy, I don't know what he was trying to do. But he just, maybe he didn't see that bar or something. And he hit his head on it. Mm. Blood went everywhere. And we had this firefighter that was there. Thank goodness.
Right, right.
Because he tended to him.
Yeah.
I was like, you can get that. You can get that. So he tended to him. And I think the Air Force told him he couldn't come back. Or either he just said that. Maybe, I don't know if his pride was hurt, but.
Right. Yeah. Didn't see him again.
I didn't see him again. And I hated it because, I mean, it was unfortunate that happened. But that's probably one of the weirdest things. Oh, well, I mean, I've had some weird animals show up. I had, what are those lizards those people get as pets?
An iguana or something
no,
like that?
No, not an iguana. It's one of the other kind of lizards. Monitor, not a monitor lizard.
The dragon thing?
Yeah, bearded dragon. Some okay, bearded dragon just showed up one day at the gym.
Really?
So I posted it in Citizens of Wool Market. These lizard people are crazy.
Really?
They come out the woodworks to try to claim this bearded dragon. So that was kind of a weird adventure there.
Yeah.
And y'all got some cats from me
before. We did. They're still around. They're still around. Yeah.
Yeah, those cats came in the gym one day just meowing while everybody was working out. And then your mom, she took them. So that was good. So, yeah, all the animals like to draw themselves to the gym for some reason.
To the gym. Mm-hmm. Well, what about what's one of your most memorable moments or favorite things about the gym, like your gym specifically?
Oh, I don't know. We do. So this is what I like about our gym, is that our people are just down to do whatever. So it's like we always sign up for stupid stuff.
Right.
Like the CCU iron.
What is, I don't know. Tell me what that is.
I don't want to, okay, so I don't want to take anything away from a Navy SEAL, because I know that what they do is 100 times worse. But if you think about Hell Week for Navy SEALs.
Right.
That's what this event is like. You stay up for... The last one I did, we were up for almost 70 hours.
Wow.
And we were, they make you do like log PT, beach PT, where you get hit with the waves. And we had to dig a hole in the sand with a boat paddle and put ourselves in it and be buried by it. And we're carrying around it's really hard to explain.
Right.
We were in California and we went to, so anyways, the question is what I love about the gym is that I have people at the gym that will do this stuff with me.
You can call them crazy, but yeah. But they're down for whatever.
They're down to do these types of things with me. So we show up to California for this event. It's outside of Los Angeles, and I've done it 4 times. I've only passed it twice, and Sam did it with me.
Okay.
The last time, it was the long one, because it's usually about 30 or 40 hours, so you only have to spend 2 nights up.
Right.
This one we had to spend almost 3 nights up. And you don't sleep. We did get 30 minutes of sleep. I slept on Santa Monica Beach for 30 minutes with an emergency blanket on for 30 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, and it was rough. But.
So, and sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I'm just curious because I love my sleep. I have to get my 6 or 8 hours. But how do you, how do you go without sleep for that long? What is it, a mental thing? What is it? Just.
Yeah, you're falling asleep on your feet some of the time, especially at night. So what you tell yourself is, if I can just make it to daylight, if I could just make it to daylight, because if you make it to daylight, you get a weird burst of energy.
Gotcha.
And you don't feel sleepy anymore. And they do things on purpose to try to make you sleepy. Like, one time they made us screw our name into a log with 50 screws with a screwdriver, and that took a minute. So you're tired and you're cold, because most people think California is hot. Well, in May, California can be 40 degrees overnight.
Really?
Especially where we go up into the mountains. Hmm. And so you're cold, and then... It's just that event is so weird. They made us tie knots one year. They made us like, and I was so sleepy. Like, here you are trying to tie a knot with like strings, and you're just so tired. We had to make fire had to make my own bow, my own drill. Like, I had to scavenge for the material to make the fire with. They did let me bring the plank,
because right.
You can't have a wet plank to make your coal. Like you're trying to develop your coal to put it into your net, your bird nest, to try to make the fire start. They made us make shoes out of a rubber tire and paracord.
Really?
One year. Yeah. We had to do Morse code 1 year. I had to take a test on the history of the town of Monrovia. I had to take a test on the Bones Brigade. I don't know if you know Tony Hawk.
I do. Skateboarding.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So the Bones Brigade was like a famous skateboarding club.
And
they made us memorize like facts about them. We had to take the test, memorize poems. We had to carry a log.
And this is why you're tired?
Yeah. It's like basically just evolution. It's evolution after evolution after evolution. And you don't know what's next.
Gotcha.
So you just show up and they say, go do this.
Really?
Okay, I'll do this.
Yeah.
And you have this long to do this.
Okay, so it is on a time
yeah, and slot. There's time hacks throughout the event that if you can't make it, then you... Like one of the time hacks I missed 1 year, we had to run to Dave & Buster's in town, which was 7 miles one way, and you had to get 200 tickets. So I'm wearing a construction vest, and I smell... like a pond, because I've been in a pond all night, and you've got a backpack, like a 40-pound pack that you're carrying, which we didn't have to carry the pack to the Dave & Buster's, but these people are in here, like, wondering, what are all these weirdos doing running around here that smell like swamp, and they're trying to get these tickets? Well, I bribed a little kid to give me some of his tickets.
Really?
I said, I'll give you $20 if you give me them tickets. Well, on the way back, we had to run 7 miles back to the Boy Scout camp, and I didn't make it in time. I got cut by 1 hour, 1 minute and 26 seconds. I got cut.
Really?
Yeah. So some of the times you get cut because you're not in time. Some of the times you get cut if you can't do a task. Like if I couldn't have made those shoes with the paracord and the tire, like I had to take a tire and cut it. It was a radial.
Yeah. What did you cut it with? I mean, because obviously.
A K-bar knife.
Okay.
I mean, you're just doing the best you can do. And then I had my paracord that they told me I had to bring ahead of time. And look, those shoes were awful. I mean, it was like I had to cut the sidewall out because it's like you couldn't get the tread. Yeah. The tread had, you know, they had the wires in it. I'm like, my K-bar is getting dull here. I'm not going to be able to cut this.
Yeah.
So thank goodness a guy named Victor, that time around, we had like half the people that were in it with us spoke Spanish exclusively.
Really?
So we were partnered up with Spanish speakers only. So some of their friends knew English, so we could kind of talk with each other. So Victor had duct tape.
Okay.
And we went and asked the guy over the challenge. I said, can we put duct tape on these shoes to make them stick or, you know, make it work? Because you had only did you have to make the shoes, but you had to walk 2 miles in them.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So with a 40-pound pack on your back.
So if they broke, I mean, is it over with right there? Yeah. Like they're watching your feet, and if your shoes snap, you're done?
If you come back without your shoes working and functioning, you're out.
Really?
So we had a little duct tape. And we just put a little duct tape on there for insurance purposes.
Right.
And we asked him, can we use this duct tape for insurance? He said, well, the rules state that the shoes have to be on your feet when you leave and on your feet when you come back. So... pretty much, they just have to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we made them work with the duct tape.
Wow.
So it's just a weird event. The one of the most memorable things that we did with it is like we got on a team of like 12 people, and we had to carry a log, like a telephone pole, up a mountain, and then I had a pocket chainsaw.
I
don't know if you've ever seen one of those.
I haven't.
It's two handles, and it's like a chainsaw. Chain, so just the chain. When you cut it, you're just friction back and forth. So when we got up to the top of the mountain, we had to take out our pocket chainsaw, and we had to cut our own piece of the log. So you had like 12 people on the telephone pole, like all trying to cut their piece off of the telephone pole at once. And so then you had to carry your own piece back down the mountain by yourself. And then that's the one we had to screw our name into it.
I got you.
Yeah. I mean, they just, and we didn't know, you don't know until you get there what you have to do.
Right. It's not something you can sit and train for and say, okay, I'm going to cut this and do this. Yeah. And
Yeah. They tell you, like, for the last year that we did it, they're like, okay, bring a boat paddle that's 5 feet, at least 5 feet long.
Right.
You're like, okay, what am I going to do with that? I don't know.
Right.
Bring an emergency blanket. Bring, what else did they have? I mean, just random weird stuff. Bring four tennis balls with your name on them. You're like, well, what are you going to do with them?
Yeah.
Well, we found out they threw them in a pond with hundreds of other tennis balls, and you had to get in that pond with your backpack on in the middle of the night, and you had to find the tennis balls that have your name on it.
Yeah, so, I'd be out.
It's just a weird, that's why I say it's like hell week for Navy SEALs.
Right.
Not that it's, I'm not trying to take away from what they do.
Right.
But it's like you show up and you don't know what you have to do until they tell you what to do.
Right.
And then you don't know what's next. So that messes with people's minds when they don't know what's next.
Right.
And you just have to kind of go with it. And they'll be letting people sitting over there eating spaghetti while you're over there. Miss Ferguson, come over here and do 100 burpees. I'm like, why would I do? Well, don't ask. You better not ask. You just better do them. Yes, sir.
Really?
While they're sitting over there having fun.
And yeah, you're over here teasing you.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh my gosh, why am I doing this? So you can't let any of that stuff get to you, like what's going on with anybody else. You just have to do your own thing. So we just went to Leadville.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I tried to run 100 miles for the second time.
Okay, second time.
I failed it.
Okay.
For the second time.
How far did you get?
38.
Okay. And I don't want to take up too much of your time, but just talking about it just briefly, how do you prepare for a 100-mile run? Like, and how long should it take somebody to do 100 miles? What does that look like? And is you're not running, you're walking, but like, take me through it.
Yeah, I think it depends on where the 100 miler is.
Well, like this one, for example.
This one, I don't know if you could prepare for it in Mississippi.
Really?
Leadville elevation is 10,150 or 10,200, depending on what sign you look at in the town.
Wow.
It's the highest elevation city in the country. Right. It's not the highest elevation, but it's the highest elevation city in the country. So they live at 10,150 feet. So the air's thinner, or there's just less oxygen in the air for you. And it was dry this year. It was a lot drier. I've been to Leadville several times, and this is the worst I've ever felt there.
Really?
But and the problem with this race is, like, I could do 100 miles. Like, I could go probably run 100 miles tomorrow. But the time caps.
Gotcha.
So that's how, for this race, I think the training will have to be something where I can focus on some speed. Because the climbing really takes, I'm not very good at climbing. I can fly downhill, but I have a hard time climbing uphill.
So you're not just running up a hill with 10,000 foot of elevation. You're climbing and doing that. Like it's not just you're not just running.
Yeah, well, you're running a lot of it, and some of these people are freaks of nature, and they can run up the mountain. You're not climbing on hands and knees in the mountain. There is a race I do that's like that. It's like a mile of climbing on your hands and knees up a briar patch by Brushy State Prison in Tennessee. It's called the Barkley Fall Classic. It's the hardest 50K, I think. One of the hardest 50Ks in the country. Right. And I've done that one, and that one's pretty difficult. And they have time hacks, too, that are pretty tough. But this Leadville one, it's just you have to be able to go uphill fast, because some of the uphill portions are pretty long and spread out. So you have to be able to go faster and if you can't go fast up, you have to be able to make it up in the flat parts. And I just wasn't able to do that. We did get to climb. So Leadville takes you from 10,000, and then you move up to 11,000 for the first climb, and you go back down, and you come back up again another 11,000 for another climb. And then there's one really big climb that goes from 9,000 to at a town called Twin Lakes, which is the coolest little town. It's on the Continental Divide. And it goes up to 12,000, like 300, 12,500 feet elevation. That's a pretty tough hike for flatlanders like myself. Right. And so we did do that one the next day, and it was nice to be able to do that. Even though I failed at 38 miles, I still had it in me to go climb another, 10. It was a 10-mile round trip, but it's beautiful there. And, you know, I could do a 100-miler. I just want to do that one.
Right.
That's the one I want to do.
I got you.
I could go run another one, and I could probably pass it, because some of them have cutoffs that are like 40 hours. This really? One's cutoff is 30 hours. So you have to be prepared to be able to run overnight in probably frigid, below freezing temperatures for some of it. So just depending on the time of the year, you know, you never know what weather's going to do. This year it was really cool. I mean, it was really warmer at Leadville than it had been in the year I tried in 2021. But some people have told me they've done the race on the overnight portions and it was 26 degrees.
Wow. That's insane to me.
Yeah. So that's why this race is a race I want to do. Like I want to do 100 milers, but it's like the 100 miles isn't really the challenge to me.
Right.
It's the terrain, it's the elevation, it's the temperatures, all of those things combined together.
Well, so talking like going through that right there, and you know, it's crazy to me. And then you find out more and more that there are way more people like this. But David Goggins, for example,
he's pretty cool.
He's on TikTok everywhere, and I watch him, and I'm like, you know, he's untouchable. He's nobody's like him. And then I hear that, and I'm like, oh, well,
no, there's a lot of people like him,
right?
You know, one of my favorites is Chad Wright? You need to follow him too.
Really.
I love, he did a documentary, and like it just resonates. Like their mindset is what makes them so interesting to me. It's not what they do.
Right.
It's their mindset. So Chad is also a prior Navy SEAL, and there's a race in Tennessee called the Endless Mile, and it's like, or I don't know if it's called the Endless Mile. I have to quote, go back and get you the name of it. Yeah. But it's basically like, I think it's a 4-mile loop.
Really?
And they just keep having to do this 4-mile loop. They have an hour to do it, which 4 miles in an hour is, for a runner, you know, pretty decent. They come back, they get about 20 minutes to rest.
Right.
And it's a last man standing type of race.
Really?
So it's like the race doesn't start until you have like just a few contenders left, really.
Right, right.
So, and that's like when he was talking in that documentary, it just resonated with me so much. He was like, I'm waiting for the race to start. He was like on mile 70. And he was like, the race hasn't even started yet. Because there's like still 30 people in it.
Yeah.
He's like, none of these people are worthy contenders. Like, he didn't mean it disrespectful.
Right.
But he's like, I'm waiting until it comes down to me and that person.
Right, right.
And that's whenever the race will begin. Because like, you know, people want to strive to do things. I mean, even what you do, I think, in your car, we need challenge.
Right.
We were made to do hard things. We weren't made to be comfortable.
Right.
We weren't made to just sit back and have everything that we want always handed to us and given to us. We were made to challenge ourselves and do something hard. I had a conversation with a guy like that at the Barkley Fall Classic one year. That's, again, it's a super hard race. It's 30% pass rate.
Really?
Okay. There are 500 people sign up, and about 100 and something pass it. Fewer even women, but few women sign up for it. Not a lot of women like to do these weird things like what I like to do. So we don't have as many women in the field that are doing it. But we were talking. He was like from Atlanta. He worked in an office, you know, a lifestyle that you and I don't really understand because we live out in the middle of nowhere, Mississippi. But here he is in a big city in Atlanta, you know, living that life on a wheel, you know, living in town, probably doesn't see grass very often. And he was like, you know, I don't know why we do stuff like this. And I said, I know why, because you weren't made to sit in an office.
Right, right, exactly.
You were made to be outside, doing something with your hands, being productive, you know, making something.
Pushing yourself.
Yourself. You know, our ancestors, they lived hard.
Right.
And all they had to worry about was living.
Yep.
I had to eat. I had to protect myself, protect my family. You know, and now we don't have those concerns anymore, and we wonder why we're depressed, because we don't do anything worthwhile.
Yep.
And that's why I think what you do is really cool, because you're doing something worthwhile. You're doing something that you enjoy. You know, same thing for me. I want to do things I enjoy.
That's interesting. I guess I haven't really thought about it that way, you know, that obviously everything, I know we all live very sheltered lives is, I guess, the best way to explain it, but I didn't really you know, comprehend it that way. You know, that back then, you know, everybody was having to, you know, fight. And now we don't have to fight.
They had to fight
and
to live.
Wonder what's wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully you didn't have to fight your neighbors, but if you did, you know, you did.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you did have to fight to live. You had to prepare. Winter was tough. You know, what happens if all your crops died? What happens if all your cattle, your livestock died? You know, I just think about, I know this is like weird and like whatever, but like I think about Civil War times and people down here. You know, I had family who were affected by that.
Right.
And they had to scrape by. They had nothing. Our entire infrastructure was destroyed.
Yeah.
So they had to try to reinvent themselves and come out of that. I mean, after every period of struggle, you know, we've had hard struggles throughout history of our country and the world.
Right.
And so here we are so comfortable, and we don't ever have to think about how, you know, how important it is to be fit, because what if you don't have those comforts anymore?
Right.
What happens if you don't have air conditioner? Some, yeah. You know, people are spoiled to that.
Yeah.
I don't want my life to be over because I don't have air conditioner.
Right.
If my air goes out for a hurricane, I mean, yeah, it's uncomfortable, but I'm not going to be like, oh, you know, this is the end of the world. I can't make it. I want to be able to eat off the land if I had to.
Right.
You
know? Yep.
So
it's very interesting for sure. And it's, like I said, it's something that everybody takes for granted. Definitely takes for granted.
Well, because our life has been like the, you know, it's almost like you're not living your life. Your life is living you.
Right.
And there's something missing, but you don't know what's missing. You know, a lot of people in this country are so far separated from their ancestors that used to live off the land.
Right.
That I don't think they have any inclination about it. You know, my daddy still has tools in his shed that his grandpa that was born in 1857 had.
Really?
So, and he still knows how to use things that his grandpa his daddy was born in 1901. My grandpa was born in 1901. I didn't never meet him because he died before I was born.
Right.
But, and he had my dad late. He was 40-something when he had my dad, because my dad was born in 1946.
Really?
So we still have all these old implements, these old farming implements. My dad knows how to drill a well, you know.
Wow.
My dad was the first of his family to go to work.
Really?
Whereas there's like, my grandpa lived off the land.
Right, you know, right.
He was a farmer.
Yeah,
so
and
people
that
are separated from that.
Great Depression times and everything that your grandpa went through. Yeah.
Yeah, he was a hobo in the Depression.
Really?
He rode trains.
Really?
My dad said to try to find work because, you know, there was a family. They had 15 kids.
Right.
His dad had 15 kids.
Wow.
So when you have 15 kids and 10 of them, I think 10 of them were boys, they got to find their own way. Like,
right.
Daddy can't support 15 boys.
Yeah.
You know, he needs them to help them, like, while they're raising. But once they get to be men on their own, they got to go find their own way. So my grandpa had to do that in the worst time of our country, in the Depression.
Wow.
So that's why, you know, like our older parents, I think they save so much stuff.
Yeah.
Because you never know where you're going to need that fan.
You can tell who's from that era because it's like, yep.
That vacuum cleaner quit working, but I'm going to keep it over there just in case I need this part.
Yeah. Yeah. We're either going to fix it or we're going to keep it for parts. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's very interesting for sure. But I think that that's why they have things. You know, like I look at, you know, my peepaw, I had him on here yesterday or 2 days ago, and just talking about the stuff that he's been through and lived through. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that makes sense for why, you know, you're this way and you do things this way. And, you know, like I said, I just think a lot of people take things for granted nowadays, for sure.
They do. You can go down the store and buy it. My daddy would always say, I ain't buying no bottled water.
Really?
Yeah, I don't. To this day, I don't know if he's bought bottled water or not, but he's just like, that beats all I ever seen.
People paying for water.
you know, it's just a different thought process, and I have that same thought process too. I mean, it's getting harder and harder. The world is changing at a very rapid pace, a lot faster than what it did, you know, the first 20 or so years of my life, and the last 20 or so years of my life. It's like I'm looking up, I'm like, whoa, this is like a weird world that we're living in right now.
It's certainly different. Mm-hmm. Well, Miss Janice, I really appreciate your time. I don't want to keep you for too much longer.
Yeah, no, I can keep going. I love it.
We'll have to get you back on, and you definitely need to have your own. You need to start one of your own for sure, because the stories and stuff you would have people engaged for sure.
Oh, well, I appreciate you for having me, and your family means a lot to me. Y'all are just great people, and I don't know your people, but I do hope to come to one of your races. I'd love to have one of the. We tried to do it last year to have the gym come out to a race, so hopefully we can have them. This fall come out to watch a race, because I love dirt track. I love it. As a kid growing up, you know, right. We had a lot of family friends that did it, and I was always just so, you know.
Did you impressive. Go or yeah. you just yeah. okay
yeah.
okay
yeah so and we've been to actually a race where you were racing back at the Outlaw, I think the Outlaw Speedway.
Yeah,
my husband and I went there
a while ago.
That was the latest one I've been to. It's been a really long time, but I love cars. I love extreme. I love wrecks.
Yeah, it seems everybody does. That's the coolest part.
I love watching. It's just a lot of fun to go. And I just think that's the people. I think that's the best of America, in my opinion, is at the dirt track.
Yep.
You find just some salt of the earth people there. So it feels like I'm with my people when I go there, even though I'm not part of that culture or community. But, you know, you just feel at home that the people are so accepting for the most part, and just really good people. So,
right. Exactly. Well, yeah, y'all are definitely going to have to come out. We'll have to look at some dates and figure out when's convenient and stuff.
Okay.
But before I let you go,
okay.
the final question, and I have to read it off because, like I said, it's hard for me not to mess it up. And there's a disclaimer to it. We understand that everything happens for a reason, and you're meant to be who you are and where you are today. But my question is, if you were to go back to being 21 years old, and the only difference would be you'd have the knowledge and of the things that you do today, is there anything that you would do differently?
No.
Really?
No, because I wouldn't, like you mentioned at the front, I wouldn't be sitting here with you.
Right, right.
Because everything did happen the way it was supposed to happen. And I know that's probably like a cheesy answer, but I wouldn't be all the things. Like, it just, I don't know. So I wouldn't change it. I mean, if I could maybe pick some winning lotto ticket numbers or something, I don't know.
Right.
That might be, but I don't know, then you would be different.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It changed for sure.
I'm the kind that if I won the lottery, I wouldn't want anybody to know.
Right. Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Because I wouldn't want to change too much of where
people would look at you different for sure.
Yeah, and it'd you wouldn't want to change your lifestyle, because I like my people. I like who I'm around. I think average, regular, everyday people are the best type of people. I don't care about celebrities. I don't care about like all that stuff. I'd rather sit here and talk with you. Like somebody said, what celebrity would you rather sit with? None.
Exactly.
Regular people. Yep. You know, or where it's at for me. So I wouldn't change anything. I think where I'm at's pretty good.
Well, I think that's a great answer. Mm-hmm. Well, again, we appreciate you being on here, and we'll have to get your husband on for sure.
Oh, y'all need to.
Yeah.
He's a hoot. So if I can convince him, he's kind of private, but once you get him going, he won't stop, and he will make you will be rolling on the floor with his stories.
Well, yeah, I hope we can get him on here. But again, thank you for being on. We appreciate your time. And we'll see you at the gym.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
You're listening to Off the Gas and On the Mic with Chase Holland.